Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. A record $51.5 billion is needed to help 230 million of the world's most vulnerable people in nearly 70 countries next year, the UN said on Wednesday. The appeal is 25% higher than last year's. It reflects the fact that the total number in need is 65 million more than in 2022. The UN's top emergency relief official, Martin Griffiths, said that needs are shockingly high, and this would continue into 2023.
The needs are going up because we've been smitten by the war in Ukraine, by COVID, by climate, and I fear that 2023 is going to be an acceleration of all those trends, and that's why we say in this report and generally that we hope 2023 will be a year of solidarity, just as 2022 has been a year of suffering.
As part of the appeal, the UN Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, said that it needs $1.9 billion to reach 48 million people with life-saving and livelihood assistance in 2023. Acute food insecurity continues to escalate globally, the FAO said, as it put in place plans to ensure that some of the world's most vulnerable communities continue to receive a steady supply of nutritious food. The UN agency provides cash, crops and vegetable seed packages, along with livestock feed to those in need, including in conflict zones. FAO also promotes animal health campaigns and improvements to vital infrastructure, including irrigation systems and markets, to encourage resilience to future emergencies. The legacy of the transatlantic slave trade reverberates to this day, just as modern-day enslavement is growing, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said on Thursday. In a message ahead of commemorations for the International Day for the Abolition of Slavery on the 2nd of December, Mr. Guterres said that societies remain scarred by the historical suffering of enslaved Africans and are unable to offer everyone the same development opportunities. The UN chief also urged action to identify and recommit to eradicating all forms of contemporary slavery, from people trafficking to sexual exploitation, child labor, forced marriage, and the use of children in armed conflict. Citing the latest global estimates of modern slavery on forced labor and forced marriage, Mr. Guterres said that 15 million people were enslaved in 2021. He explained that marginalized groups are most at risk, such as ethnic, religious, and linguistic minorities, along with migrants, children, and LGBTI individuals, and that most of these vulnerable persons are women. Across Africa, efforts to reduce the number of women and infants dying in childbirth are set to slow without a substantial increase in investment, the UN Health Agency said on Thursday. New data from the World Health Organization, WHO, indicates that by 2030 in sub-Saharan Africa, 390 women will die in childbirth for every 100,000 live births. This is more than five times higher than Sustainable Development Goal targets and well above the global average of 211. The European average is 13. For many African women, childbirth remains a persistent risk and millions of children do not live long enough to celebrate their fifth birthday, said Dr. Matshidiso Moeti, WHO's Regional Director for Africa. Today, on average in Africa, 72 infants die in childbirth per 1,000 successful births. Progress is being made in saving more babies, WHO said, but if current trends continue, there will still be 54 deaths per 1,000 live births by 2030. This is more than twice the target set for 2030. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
For radio as secular as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
We honor the retiring Dr. Anthony Fauci, a humanist and scientific humanitarian.
Then FFRF's Director of Governmental Affairs, Mark Dan,
talks about fighting Christian nationalism in the 117th Congress.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The House has passed legislation to block a nationwide rail strike by imposing a contract that's been rejected by unions representing the majority of freight rail workers. In addition, the House passed a separate bill by a much narrower margin to give 7 days paid sick leave to railroad workers, but it remains unclear if this provision will pass in the Senate. The vote came 2 days after President Biden pushed Congress to prevent the strike. On Wednesday, Senator Bernie Sanders slammed railroad carriers for refusing to provide workers any paid sick days while their profits soar.
Do we stand with workers in the rail industry and say, yes, you are right, working conditions are horrendous, we cannot continue a process by which you have zero paid sick leave? Do we stand with workers, or do we stand with an industry that is making huge profits, pays its CEOs exorbitant salaries, and treats its working workers with contempt?
In other news from Capitol Hill, House Democrats have unanimously elected Hakeem Jeffries of New York to lead the caucus, making him the first African-American to head a political party in Congress. Jeffries, who is 52, will succeed Nancy Pelosi, who led House Democrats for two decades. Congressman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said the party could have benefited if the election to lead the party was contested, saying, quote, "This is the most significant generational change that we've seen in House Democrats in several decades. I personally believe that we would benefit from a debate on what that means," she said. While Jeffries is a member of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, he's been at odds with some progressives in the House. In 2016, he backed Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders. Last year, he told The Atlantic, quote, "There will never be a moment where I bend the knee to hard left democratic socialism," he said. On Wednesday, Democrats also elected Catherine Clark of Massachusetts to serve as whip and Pete Aguilar of California to serve as chair of the party caucus. Meanwhile, House Democrats have finally obtained Donald Trump's tax returns, ending a multi-year court battle. The Treasury Department released them to the House Ways and Means Committee Wednesday. In China, authorities have lifted some of the strictest lockdown restrictions in parts of Shanghai and Guangzhou as protests are continuing over the country's zero COVID policy. Video from Guangzhou, a major manufacturing hub, show police in hazmat uniforms confronting protesters. Russia is poised to expand its 2013 anti-LGBTQ law banning so-called gay propaganda. The law seeks to prohibit movies, advertisements, websites, and books featuring same-sex relationships or transgender characters in a positive light. Individuals found to be in violation of the law could be fined over $6,000. President Putin is expected to soon sign the law, which was approved by lawmakers. This is Ksenia Mikhailova of the Russian LGBTQ support group coming out.
This is a signal that all the types of violence against LGBT people are allowed by the state. How it already happened in 2013, when was a wave of hate crimes against LGBT. Now it will be a tsunami.
Israeli authorities arrested the prominent Palestinian activist Issa Amro on Monday, days after he posted video showing an Israeli soldier throwing an Israeli activist to the ground, then punching them in the face in the city of Hebron in the occupied West Bank. Before he was released, Amro was reportedly beaten at the police station before he was interrogated. His home was also raided. Amro is the founder of Youth Against Settlements. On Wednesday, the Israeli activist Miko Peled tweeted, quote, "Issa's life is in danger. There must be guarantees to his personal safety," he said. Meanwhile, Israeli forces have killed another two Palestinians during a raid in the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. According to Al Jazeera, Israel's now killed eight Palestinians over the past 3 days in the West Bank. A U.S. citizen who lives in Massachusetts has been arrested on a trip to the United Arab Emirates and faces possible extradition to Egypt after he made a video calling on Egyptians to protest during the recent U.N. climate summit in Sharm el-Sheikh. The 46-year-old Sharif Osman is a former Egyptian army officer who's become a vocal critic of Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. Osman was arrested by two plainclothes officers in UAE November 6, 2 days after he arrived from the United States. The Biden administration's attempt to cancel hundreds of billions of dollars in student debt has been dealt another setback. The Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals has rejected a request by the Biden administration to put on hold a ruling against the plan by a judge in Texas. The issue will likely now go to the Supreme Court. In a major victory for immigrant rights activists, the federal government has announced it's closing the Berks Detention Center in Pennsylvania. Groups including the Shut Down Berks Coalition have organized for years to close the facility, which was once used to imprison families as they sought asylum. Most recently, Berks was used as an immigrant women's prison. The Los Angeles Times has revealed ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, accidentally posted detailed personal information online about more than 6,000 asylum seekers in the United States. Immigrant rights advocates fear the unprecedented data release could jeopardize the lives of many immigrants who came to the U.S. fleeing torture and violence. A group of Yale students are suing the Ivy League university for discriminating against students with mental health challenges. The lawsuit alleges Yale pressures students to take voluntary leaves of absence if they're experiencing significant symptoms of mental health disabilities while suggesting the students might otherwise be suspended. Students who take leave, either voluntarily or involuntarily, often lose parts of their tuition and accommodation payments as well as access to student health insurance. The founder of the website Cryptome.org has written to the U.S. Justice Department with a strange request. He's asking to be indicted for violating the Espionage Act. Cryptome's founder, John Young, says he should be added as a co-defendant in the prosecution of WikiLeaks' Julian Assange because he published the same leaked government documents at the center of the U.S. case against Assange. While Julian Assange faces 175 years in U.S. prison if he is extradited and convicted, the U.S. government has never moved to prosecute John Young, who says he published the documents 2 days prior to WikiLeaks. Earlier this week, the New York Times and four international newspapers called on Biden to drop the charges against Assange, saying publishing is not a crime. President Biden announced new investments for indigenous communities, including $135 million to help 11 tribal communities severely impacted by climate change. Three of those communities are planning on relocating altogether. Biden spoke Wednesday at the White House Tribal Nations Summit.
There are tribal communities at risk of being washed away by superstorms, rising sea levels, and wildfires raging.
President Biden also vowed to protect Spirit Mountain, or Avi Quaame, in Nevada, a sacred site for the Fort Mojave tribe and others. Advocates have been pushing for years to designate the area as a national monument. The Justice Department is suing Jackson, Mississippi over its failure to provide its 150,000 majority black residents with safe drinking water. This is Attorney General Merrick Garland speaking on Wednesday.
Communities of color, indigenous communities, and low-income communities often bear the brunt of these harms. As we work to fulfill our responsibility to keep the American people safe, to protect civil rights, we will continue to prioritize cases like this one that will have the greatest impact on communities most burdened by environmental harm.
On Tuesday, the City of Jackson and the Mississippi Health Department agreed to federal oversight of its crumbling water system. In August, city officials issued boil water advisories across Jackson that lasted nearly 7 weeks. In Pennsylvania, the fracking company Coterra Energy has agreed to pay $16.2 million after pleading no contest for polluting the water in and around the community of Dimock. Coterra, which was previously known as Cabot Oil and Gas, will also pay water bill payments for the impacted residents for the next 75 years. The 2022 Right Livelihood Awards were given out Wednesday at a ceremony in Stockholm, Sweden. The award is widely known as the Alternative Nobel Prize. Winners included the Somali activist Ilwat Elman, who was recognized along with her mother for their work to bring peace in Somalia.
Somalia right now is facing the worst drought in the last 40 years. More than a million people are already internally displaced. If immediate action is not taken, we are on the brink of a famine.
Other winners of the 2022 Right Livelihood Awards included the Ukrainian group Center for Civil Liberties, led by Alexandra Matvichuk, the Venezuelan collective Siko Sisola, and the Ugandan Africa Institute for Energy Governance. Visit democracynow.org to watch the Right Livelihood Awards ceremony. And today marks World AIDS Day. UNAIDS is calling for a renewed push to combat the HIV virus after the world turned its focus to COVID-19 and other global crises over recent years. 1.5 million new HIV infections were recorded in 2021, 1 million more than the global target of 500,000, with an estimated death toll of 650,000. UNAIDS also reports dangerous inequalities persist with girls and young women, especially at risk. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Happy December. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome to Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Annie Laurie's co-host, Dan Barker.
And you're also my husband.
And your husband, and co-president with you of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And as Annie Laurie said, this is the December 1st, 2022 episode of Free Thought Radio. We've been broadcasting since 2006, and this is our 866th show. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, you'd think that we'd be a little more professional.
Well, we're starting to get there, I think. Grant Blaschka, who's with Audio for the Arts, is our engineer in the Stephen Uhl Friendly Atheist Studio. That's spelled U-H-L, Stephen Uhl Friendly Atheist Studio in Freethought Hall. Freethought Hall is the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin.
Freethought Radio is the weekly production of FFRF, which works to keep religion out of government, to uphold our secular and godless constitution, and also to represent those of us who are also godless, and that is, you know, at least unaffiliated today is 29% of the U.S. population and growing. And if you are a freethinker, we would love to send you some information about FFRF's vital work to keep religion out of government. And you can go to FFRF.org and ask for a copy of our newspaper, Free Thought Today, or simply go to the Join and become part of our important work.
The December paper is a really good one this
yeah,
time.
Yeah, it's almost a double issue with all kinds of convention coverage, and also reprinting the speech that novelist John Irving wrote and delivered at our recent national convention.
So on today's show, during the second half of the show, FFRF's Director of Governmental Affairs, Mark Dan, that basically means he's our lobbyist in D.C., Mark Dan will recap the past year, our lobbying efforts fighting Christian nationalism within the 117th Congress, and what we have to look forward to in the next 2 years with the 118th Congress coming.
And some of it I'm not looking forward to, but Mark is an optimist, and it'll be fun to talk with him. And before that, following up on last week's Thanksgiving show where we gave thanks where thanks is due, we're going to give thanks to Dr. Anthony Fauci, who is retiring at the end of December.
This week is the anniversary of the birth of the lyricist Ira Gershwin, who, with his composer brother George Gershwin, wrote many of the songs in the Great American Songbook. Ira Gershwin was born December 6, 1896. The Gershwin family was from a Jewish heritage, but they were not religious. Between segments during today's show, listen for some Gershwin music, including Bess, You Is My Woman, that's from Porgy and Bess, Summertime, also from Porgy and Bess, as well as Our Love is Here to Stay and The Man I Love.
This week on FFRF's Ask an Atheist, you, Dan, and FFRF's Director of Governmental Affairs Mark Dan, who's going to be joining us later, co-hosted an interview with Evan Minton, and he was denied critical health care by California's largest hospital provider, Dignity Health, because he's a transgender man. Dignity Health, of course, is a Catholic health provider.
During the show, it was a very moving show, by the way, he told his story. Mark and I asked Evan to tell us what happened when the Catholic hospital learned that he is transgender.
So the day before my surgery was to take place, my doctor called me and she said, "Hey, Evan, are you sitting down?" And I said, "What? Why?" And she said, "Are you by yourself?" And I said, "What? Why?" These are questions you never want to hear from a doctor. And she said, "I have to let you know that your surgery has been canceled." And I said, "What?" And she said, "They won't let me perform on you." And I said, "I thought you performed hysterectomies there all the time." And she said, "I do. They won't let me perform on you because you are transgender." And at that point, all of this shame that I had to deal with myself, like this internalized shame that I had grown up with, all of the struggles that I had encountered along my journey, all came crashing back to me at the same time. I just collapsed, just hysterically crying, because it meant two things. It meant that they were rejecting me solely because of who I am, and it also meant that all of my other medical procedures that I had lined up were put into flux. And so that left me completely stranded and lost. It was devastating for more than one reason.
So Evan's story caught the attention of Congress after Trump and his administration singled him out as a reason why religious hospitals should have the freedom to deny health care to transgender people. Evan testified before Congress, and during the hearing, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez came to his defense.
And we played some of that during that Ask an Atheist show with Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez testifying in his favor. You can watch that entire Ask an Atheist show right now on FFRF's YouTube channel. Go to our YouTube channel and look for the Ask an Atheist playlist.
And on our TV show this week, Free Thought Matters, our guest is Andrew Seidel, author of the new book, American Crusade, How the Supreme Court is Weaponizing Religious Freedom.
We asked Andrew during the show why he says we should be scared of what's happening with the current Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court really is destroying the First Amendment. There is a well-funded group of Christian nationalist organizations that are working to alter the meaning of the First Amendment, to change that long-standing protection of religious freedom into a weapon, a tool that conservative Christians can use to impose their religion on other people.
And in your book, you call them the Crusaders. Why'd you pick that word, and who are these Crusaders?
So the Crusaders are the legal groups that are behind this, sort of the anti-FFRS, the Anti-Americans United, the groups like Alliance Defending Freedom and First Liberty Institute and Liberty Council, this Orwellian word salad of groups that are working to really push and turn this into a Christian nation. They're the Crusaders because they're on this crusade, truly a religious vendetta, essentially, against the true meaning of our First Amendment and working to morph that into something very, very different.
So you can watch that episode of Free Thought Matters right now on our YouTube channel, FFF's YouTube channel. Look for the Free Thought Matters playlist.
And if you happen to live in one of the 13 cities or major cities in the United States where Free Thought Matters is broadcast on local TV, you can watch that show in your very own area there every Sunday morning. For stations and times, check out ffrf.org/freethoughtmatters or go to our website and look for the show under our news dropdown.
And speaking of news, once again, we have a lot of news. And Dan, tell us about this joint letter we signed.
The Freedom from Religion Foundation is one of more than 60 organizations calling on the Senate Judiciary Committee to investigate an alleged ethical violation by a Supreme Court justice and to investigate an infiltration of the court by a Christian anti-abortion group.
And of course, last week we reported that FFRF had already sent a letter, a second letter, to Chief Justice John Roberts, asking him to investigate what is going on, especially with Justice Alito. So yeah, we were glad to have 59 other groups be concerned and write the Judiciary Committee.
And among many other violations and allegations, the vice president of a group called Faith and Liberty, her name is Peggy Nienaber, she claims she's been praying, or she has prayed with justices inside the court building after Roe v. Wade was reversed.
But the new material, of course, was that two donors for this anti-abortion group said, told the head of the anti-abortion group that after they dined with Justice Alito in 2014, he told them he leaked the outcome of the Hobby Lobby case, which was where the Hobby Lobby group was allowed to break, to violate the Affordable Care Act and deny contraceptive coverage to employees if it didn't like the contraception because the corporation had, this violated the corporation's religious feelings. So it was a very bad decision, but it gave Schenck, his group, a lot of time to mobilize because they knew what the decision was going to be. So this needs to be investigated.
And maybe we can talk with Mark Dan, our lobbyist in D.C., about this in a few minutes. FFRF is working to pass the Supreme Court Ethics Recusal and Transparency Act to impose ethics requirements on Supreme Court justices.
And as this letter pointed out, we have a crisis in the court's legitimacy, and we're in desperate need of some transparency and some ethics reforms.
So good news, bad news on the Respect for Marriage Act?
Yeah, we talked about this also last week, and it passed the Senate, the Respect for Marriage Act, which basically repeals the Defense of Marriage Act that had denied federal benefits to same-sex couples. It will also prohibit states from refusing to recognize an out-of-state marriage that's based on sex, race, or ethnicity. But in order to get this bill passed in the Senate, Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin and Susan Collins of Maine had to adopt this religious compromise that guarantees religious groups won't be provided to take part in any kind of celebration, good services, accommodation to solemnize or celebrate such a marriage. And then Susan Collins said what a great thing it was because it advances religious liberty.
Huh.
And of course, we issued a statement saying, no, this does not advance religious liberty to have this exemption in this otherwise very good bill.
Religious liberty to discriminate.
Yes,
is what
and
it is.
It's just part of this whole privileging of religion and forcing your religion on other people. And it also does not protect us. It does not protect people if the Supreme Court were to overturn the Obergefell decision that legitimized same-sex marriages in about, I can't remember now how many states, 29 states, I think, have passed constitutional amendments barring same-sex marriage. Those were invalidated by the Supreme Court decision in Obergefell, but if they were to overturn Obergefell and turn it back to the states as they have with abortion, we will be in deep trouble.
So our attorneys...
Court reform, yes.
Court reform, yes. Our attorneys here at the Freedom from Religion Foundation are very busy. They're not only taking legal action in the courts, but also writing letters of complaint around the country. Many letters prompted by your complaints, people, members of the public, noticing violations. Here's just one example. FFRF is urging a Georgia police department to remove a cross from their police property. It's the Swainsboro Police Department in Georgia. They have a huge Latin cross attached to the base of the flagpole in front of its police building, which caused a concerned resident to reach out to us, to
understandably,
FFRF.
Because that seems to link piety and patriotism together.
So we're asking them to remove that cross. A Christian cross belongs on a on church property or on somebody's front yard or on somebody's T-shirt or whatever, but not on the property that belongs to all of us citizens. So we haven't talked much about the fact that FFRF has a regular blog called Free Thought Now.
It's freethoughtnow.org if you want to get it, or you can sign up for them. And I wrote a blog this week that was headlined, "You're 1 in 8 billion, and that's no compliment." And pointing out that about 2 weeks ago, the human population reached a record 8 billion people. That was on November 15th. In the year 1800, there were 1 billion of us. It will be predicted there will be 9 billion within 15 years and 10 billion by 2058.
Wow.
And as I wrote, someone needs to say stop. And I pointed out that there are a lot of people who do not deny climate change, who think that's ridiculous, who do deny the connection between our overpopulated world and climate change, and especially in a wealthy country like the United States, where everybody consumes so much, where China and the United States are the two largest emitters of climate-changing gases. And so the more of us there are, the more we drive cars, we are in planes, we heat our homes. And this is disproportionately affecting third world countries or poorer countries, especially Pakistan. A third of it underwater right now. This is unprecedented. They're asking for reparations. And so we need to, as humanists, leave our world and planet a better place than we found it.
So we have to take a break here, but there's a couple more blogs you might be interested in. Recently, I wrote one about my appearance on an off-Broadway play, The Unbelieving, about clergy who have lost their faith. It's kind of a light, fun blog. And then Patrick Elliott, our attorney here at the Freedom From Religion Foundation, has a blog explaining why FFRF signed on to a friend of the court brief in a case challenging Indiana's ban on trans girls playing sports. And
this
it's mainly
a 10-year-old, by the way.
A 10-year-old girl, yeah.
And that he pointed out that extreme religious groups are behind it.
Yeah, so you can read these blogs and learn in more depth than we can get into on this show at freethoughtnow.org. We're going to take a break, and after the break, we're going to honor Dr. Anthony Fauci, who is retiring at the end of this month. And then after that, we'll speak with FFRF's Director of Governmental Affairs, Mark Dan, about wrapping up this year's efforts at lobbying for secular rights at the 117th Congress. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Don Ardell, a life member of FFRF and promoter of Real Wellness Lifestyles. I'm no longer willing to say, in God I trust, so help me God, God bless America, or pretend America is more under a God than any other nation. Join the resistance to Christian nationalism and politicians more attentive to what they think God wants than the needs of their constituents. Let's make separation of church and state a reality and turn back the drift to theocracy. Support FFRF. Our freedom really does depend on freethinkers.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
Beware of dogma. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. Last week, the New York Times ran a front page article on the role that online disinformation and misinformation has played and is playing in the spread of COVID, particularly by the website Gab, founded by the notorious Andrew Torba, who has said that unapologetic Christian nationalism is what will save the United States of America. When the Times contacted Torba for a comment on its article, he said, "Please repent and accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior." That was his comment. So although the Times has referred to the spread of misinformation by right-wing platforms, let's keep in mind they're really extremist religion-based platforms.
But on the other side, on the secular scientific side, is Dr. Anthony Fauci. He's the chief medical advisor to the President of the United States. He's been the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases since 1984. Last week, on November 22nd, Dr. Fauci spoke at a press briefing led by White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre, who honored Dr. Fauci as he is approaching retirement at the end of December.
During his remarks, Fauci stressed the importance of fighting disinformation.
The way you counter misinformation and disinformation is that to do whatever you can as often as you can to provide correct information. The people who have correct information, who take science seriously, who don't have strange way out theories about things, but who base what they say on evidence and data, need to speak up more, because the other side that just keeps putting out misinformation and disinformation seems to be tireless in that effort.
Dr. Fauci, who's retiring right after his 82nd birthday on December 24th, has indeed been tireless in fighting disinformation, and we want to point out that Dr. Fauci is a secular humanist.
In an interview for The Scientist, Fauci said, "I look upon myself as a humanist. I have faith in the goodness of mankind." And we know this personally because one of our longtime members who just died, the Bible scholar Hector Avalos, had a rare disease, and he says that Dr. Fauci
personally
helped Hector get over the disease at that time.
Yeah, he died from something totally different, and this would have killed him, and Dr. Fauci personally was his savior. So Dan wrote a song to honor Anthony Fauci, which he performed during our Thanksgiving Ask an Atheist song last week. This is just a rough mix. Giving thanks where thanks is due, the song is called Thank You, Fauci.
I want to thank you, Fauci, for what you taught us. We really do appreciate the hope you brought us. We were facing a battle we might not win. You stepped in to guide the nation. You told us to be careful, to follow science, and to resist the stubborn forces of defiance. You persuaded the government and the press. We express our admiration. Thanks to science, we're weathering a worldwide war. And thanks to science, we know much more than before. Dr. Fauci, we owe so much to you. So we give thanks where thanks is due. We want to thank you, Fauci, for what you taught us. We really do appreciate the hope you brought us. We were facing a battle we might not win. You stepped in and showed us how. And we want to thank you now. Thank you now. Thank you now.
Well, in the spirit of giving thanks where thanks is due, not to some God or some religion
and
or supernatural.
Dan, was that originally called Thank You, Jesus?
Well, that was a song I wrote back in the 70s that never got published.
Was it titled
It was
Thank
called
you,
Thank You, Jesus, but I threw away those words. I thought, why not thank somebody real? Next time, when I record it, my voice will be in better shape, I think. So, but anyway, it was a heartfelt honoring of a real person who has made the world
and somebody who,
a better place.
He thankfully is a secular humanist. Hmm. That's why he led our nation so well.
So after the break, we're going to talk with FFRF's Director of Governmental Affairs, Mark Dan about this past year working to fight Christian nationalism in the 117th Congress.
And to promote free thought and state church separation.
So stay tuned. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
This is Janine Garofalo. Are you tired of right-wing politicians who desperately want to impose their religious beliefs on the rest of us? I know I am. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join the fight and call the Freedom From Religion Foundation toll-free at 1-800-335-4021. That's 1-800-335-4021. Or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation website at ffrf.org. That's www.ffrf.org. Proud to be an atheist, Janine Garofalo.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. And of course, as we all know, December this year is the lame duck session of Congress, now that there's going to be a new Congress coming in January. And we have on the phone with us today from Washington, D.C., FFRF's Director of Governmental Affairs, Mark Dan, who has been dealing with the 117th Congress for this whole year, who just put out his report called Mark on the Hill, explaining our accomplishments and some of the challenges that lay ahead.
Yes, Mark, welcome back to Free Thought Radio.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here, and greetings from Washington, D.C.
And you did a very energetic, really a letter that that we emailed to all our members on November 23rd that was really cause for quite a bit of optimism. And first, before we talk about 2024, let's talk about, maybe you want to talk about the election and what it will mean for state church separation a little bit, and then we'll talk about specifics.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think the big important takeaway is that after January 6th, we reoriented the governmental affairs project to really start taking a very strong stance against Christian nationalism. And in this year's election, we saw that a lot of candidates who adhere to Christian nationalism did not win. So you had Doug Mastriano in Pennsylvania. He did not win by a tremendous margin. You also had several election-denying Secretary of States in Arizona, Michigan, Minnesota, Nevada, and New Mexico, who also lost. So for our purposes, it doesn't mean that Christian nationalism is done or vanquished. It does mean it is on its back foot, and we should be able to take a lot of we should be able to congratulate ourselves on a pretty hard-won victory. And this is not the end of everything, but I fully expect our opposition will redouble their efforts and come back strong. But we should take a moment and enjoy this moment.
So you talked about fighting Christian nationalism in the 117th Congress, which is 2 years, 2021 and this year. And and you've said we've made a lot of strides. So what are some of those strides?
I think a lot of it, if you take a look at how we've been able to go after white Christian nationalism, is first with our partners at the Baptist Joint Committee. We put out a blockbuster report with a lot of leading authors, whether they Anthea Butler, Whitehead and Perry, Andrew Seidel, Amanda Tyler as well.
Catherine
and really
Stewart.
Put together. Yes, and Catherine Stewart. And we were able to really showcase the impact that Christian nationalism played in the January 6th attack. Naturally, this got the attention of members of Congress. Representative Huffman talked about it on a floor speech that he made, plus the Congressional Free Thought Caucus, led by Representative Huffman from California and Raskin from Maryland, had a meeting with several of the authors and members of Congress about the report. We also did a public webinar with the report. It was on several, I know you guys have highlighted it and the work and a lot of the authors on FFRF's programming. And you saw the January 6th committee pick up when they, and we've all been watching the January 6th committee, And they are very intentional of what they put out. And one of a very stunning clip was Roger Stone espousing Christian nationalist beliefs and saying that we need to do this. It is a fight against the light and the dark and the good and the evil. Huh. Very Christian nationalist yes. imagery there okay. as well.
We'll see what the report comes up with, huh?
I think it's going to be very interesting, and stay tuned for more.
So, Mark, yes. you must have been really happy, as we were, to see Representative Huffman on the floor of the House there, mentioning not only the report, but the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Those things don't just happen by accident, do they?
No. So we've been a really good partner with many members of Congress, especially who are members of the Congressional Freethought Caucus, and we work diligently with his office, and we just try to be as helpful as humanly possible. If they have questions, we try to answer it as quickly as possible, or ideas and whatnot. But a lot of what I do here in Washington is just being helpful to as many member offices as humanly possible on talking a little bit about what we're doing and how we can be good, solid partners and reliable partners in their work on the Hill.
And so you are you're pointing out that we've been in the vanguard on things like court reform, FFRF has been, and court expansion. So tell us a little bit more about that.
So with court reform and court expansion, again, we've been working with excellent partners such as Demand Justice and then a lot of friends on the Unrig the Court Coalition. And so with court expansion, what that would do is it would expand the number of seats, Supreme Court seats from 9 to 13 to correspond with the original idea that the number of Supreme Court justices should equal the number of circuits, so formerly 9, currently 13. And some people might say, well, wait a second, I don't know. This sounds like, well, arbitrary of courts going up and down in number. And, well, there's been several changes to court size throughout the history of our country. And one of the most recent ones was when basically, Mitch McConnell single-handedly decided to say, you know what, Merrick Garland under Obama should not even get a hearing.
He said it was fine to keep it at 8 people for a year.
Yes, it was fine to keep it at 8 people. So we've seen the court change in very recent history. And so what this would do is it would rebalance the Supreme Court from the seats that were pretty questionable that McConnell held and from some people who've reached the court under fairly questionable circumstances.
And, you know, there's another proposal that, you know, we've also endorsed, which would be just for 2 justices, because that would mitigate, I don't know how you otherwise can solve the issue that Merrick Garland was denied a hearing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that we also had basically Amy Coney Barrett sneak down the court. Well, she wasn't sneaked down, but she was put on in less than 40 days in the midst of a national election, you know, which totally undermined Mitch McConnell's supposed reason for not having a hearing for McConnell many months before a national election. So, you know,
right.
even 2 would, there's justification for that as well.
Yeah. And I'm just happy that a lot of people, and through a lot of hard work from FFRF and our allies, are really talking in and seeing the importance of judicial reform. So another bill we heavily support is the Supreme Court Ethics Reform and Transparency Act. And
yeah.
think of this as kind of the as a way that we saw with Alito, with a lot of very questionable behavior of potentially sharing information, would rein in a lot of those practices. So that's something FFRF has been concentrated on heavily. And again, having a pro-secular majority continuing in the Senate means that judges who support the separation of state and church are going to continue to be confirmed. And that's some big news coming out of election night.
Yes. And then let's talk about something that the Freedom From Religion Foundation has been spearheading with a coalition, the Thomas Paine Memorial Association, which was really a coup.
I think so, too. And the bill to authorize a memorial to Thomas Paine, it's a very special bill. It's one of 2 bills that FFRF has been leading on, and that is the first time that has happened in our history. And the bill to support a memorial for Thomas Paine. It's bipartisan. It's the two lead sponsors, Representative Jamie Raskin, co-chair of the Congressional Freethought Caucus, and then Representative Victoria Spartz from Indiana, who's a Republican. So Democrats and Republicans see eye to eye on this one and want to see this get done. We cross your fingers and toes. We hope we can get it out of committee in this Congress. And we are certainly working with our allies in Congress and our sponsors' offices to help that process move forward as much as humanly possible.
Some of our listeners might not know that Thomas Paine was the forgotten founder who named the United States and who wrote Common Sense, who helped spark the American Revolution. He deserves to be honored.
I think so, too. And one of the big hurdles that we passed this year, it's something called the National Capital Area Memorial Advisory Commission. And what this commission does in its part, it's in law that to build a memorial here in D.C., you have to work with the National Capital Area Memorial Arts Commission, Advisory Commission. And so this kind of gives us the blessing of the Department of the Interior and all and related agencies that would oversee the, and help us manage the project. And so we went before them and they approved. And one of their comments was exactly what you said, is that, yeah, they were kind of confused of why there isn't a memorial to Thomas Paine in here in D.C. So hopefully we can rectify that situation very soon.
And then before we go to our break and talk about 2024, do you want to mention something about the National Prayer Breakfast and what we did in the past year?
Yeah, and so this has been a lot of really good work with the prayer breakfast. And there was some really good reporting from Jonathan Larson, who's a national investigative reporter for TYT or the Young Turks. And he started to highlight a lot of essentially misdeeds that have been coming out of the National Prayer Breakfast, whether it's exporting anti-LGBTQ legislation, playing a critical role in the Russian influence in campaign of 2016, the Maria Butina scandal related to that, and as just kind of a nexus for wheeling and dealing in right-wing politics under the guise of a bipartisan prayer breakfast that certainly blurs the line between separation of state and church. And with that, we're starting to see members of Congress walk away from that breakfast. So we saw Nancy Pelosi, who has attended in past years, and she did not, and she chose not to attend last year. And we hope that trend continues with a lot more members of Congress rethinking that possibility. And I hope we'll be working more with more friends and allies in the next few weeks to come.
Yes. So now we are talking with Mark Dan, who is FFRS Governmental Affairs Director. And when we come back, I said we want to talk about 2024. Well, we do, but we're running talking about the 118th Congress, which is 2023. We start with 2023. So when we come back, Mark, we want to talk about what's in store and what our listeners can do to help.
This is Free Thought Radio. We'll be right back.
Steve Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom From Religion Foundation to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we have on the phone from the District of Columbia, FFRF's Director of Governmental Affairs, Mark Dan. And in the last segment, we got some pretty good news about progress that FFRF and seculars are making in Congress, in the 117th Congress. Well, now we're looking forward, or not, to the 118th Congress. And in your letter, Mark on the Hill, to our membership, Mark, you do start off your section about 2024 saying, the danger is out there for 2024. So tell us a little more about that.
Yeah, I think one of the big dangers that's out there for 2024 is that, looking back a little bit, the Trump administration was very close to getting a lot of very general blanket rules that would have favored religious or theological needs over personal safety needs. So they would have granted vast theological exemptions. So I have no doubt that if another presidential administration gets in that's heavily indebted to the religious right, within the first few days, they're going to be able to make a very blanket executive order saying that congratulations, when it comes to dealing with the federal government or anything the federal, very strong blanket religious exemptions. So it does create the need that we do need to keep moving with a lot of our bills that we're working on, keeping up with our allies, but also and keeping up with our lobbying. And one of the things that I talked a little bit about is that FFRF is going to be rolling out our C4 to enhance our lobbying efforts and make communications with the public a little bit easier so we can go out and meet this challenge before it and hopefully prevent it from ever arriving.
Can you explain?
It's going to be called FFRF Action Fund.
Can you explain what a C4 is compared to a C3 for our listeners?
Sure. So a 501c3, that's when you think about most of your charitable organizations, whether it's FFRF or the United Way or really any of sort of the marquee charities that people give money to and get a tax write off for. And they can't participate directly in electioneering or anything along those lines, although we are allowed to lobby. What a 501c4 does is it's a little bit different. It says, yes, this organization's primary job is lobbying and education, but it also can work on direct electoral work since the people who donate to that don't get a tax write-off. And so it's a different type of designation in the tax code. So we'll be able to look at different places or candidates where we might be able to have an impact. And one area that we're thinking about is the 2023 judges elections in Wisconsin. Obviously, given that FFRF is based in Wisconsin, we've got a lot of really strong on-the-ground political knowledge about what's happening and good candidates and how we can start talking a little bit about how judicial candidates can help protect the separation state and strengthen the separation of state and church in Wisconsin, which obviously is very desperately needed.
Yeah, we have, unfortunately, elected Supreme Court justices, and Justice Sandra Day O'Connor had crusaded against that after she retired and unfortunately wasn't able to affect change here in Wisconsin. So, of course, this is primarily a lobbying group, but we can do a little electoral, and we'll be keeping people posted on that. And meanwhile, I kind of skipped over 2023 when I started the questioning here on the second segment. So what is going to change in 2023 with the election results, and how is that going to affect our work?
Right. So some of the parts of that's going to affect our work, obviously, who is in control of Congress is going to change. And so one of the things that I'm a little bit fearful about is that this Congress is going to be a little different than other Congresses we've seen, even ones that have been very conservative in the past. So people like Jim Jordan who are very conservative, are going to be heads of major committees. So the fear is that, and he'll be head of House Judiciary, and the fear is that some of the bills that would grant vast theological exemptions, usually members would introduce them, leadership wouldn't call them up for hearings or markups, but with this Congress and with some members very much adhering to Christian nationalist ideas, there's a very good chance some of those bills could see the light of day. Now, how much time Congress has to deal with them, since they've already announced that they're going to do all sorts of hearings on, I mean, one of the things that they're coming up with is Hunter Biden. So how much time they have for Hunter, for, they're going to allocate time for Hunter Biden, and it might not, they might not be able to give as much attention to the theological exemption bills, but certainly that's something we're going to be watching for. Plus, if those bills do come up for hearings and markup, we'll be able to work with a lot of our allies in Congress, so they'll be able to give very full-throated defense of the separation of church and state and why that's important. So if those bills do start moving, we're going to be ready for them.
So, but it will, of course, make it harder for us to pass. Not that we could in this last session, but it's going to make it even harder to do something about court reform,
It will make it harder to pass something about court reform. So unfortunately, the Supreme Court Ethics Recusal and Transparency Act that I mentioned last time made it out of committee. It might get a vote on the House floor for this session, but for next session, it has pretty much died. The good news is for things that are a little bit more controversial, it's going to really create an opportunity for us to have more conversations about the need for court expansion and court reform with more members of Congress who don't have to quite fear another a tough midterm climate again. And that may have been holding some members back. So I think we're going to be able to have more of those on the Hill meetings behind closed doors conversations about what our issues mean, why this importance of separation of church and state is critical to our to the function of democracy. And I think having those conversations might be a little bit easier without the midterm threat that's around and be able to have some more honest and frank conversations.
You like to look on the bright side, don't you,
Mark? Well, of course, that's 2023. When it comes to 2024, we're right back at the election threats again if you're in the House.
We could be, yes. So I think that is it. But generally speaking, with midterm elections, they usually do not go well historically. I mean, this is the prevailing wisdom, mm-hmm. but sometimes, as we've seen, the prevailing wisdom in the past few years is very different. So most people knew that this was going to be a rougher election for the president's party, and that was baked in. Sometimes when you do have the incumbent president running, that does soften the political climate, but it's usually those midterm elections. So for the Democrats, seeing the poor results that happened to them in 1994 and 2010, those ghosts were very much on the Democrats' mind as well.
But and did a little better, really. And it's not, Biden is veto-proof, right? He can't be overridden, can he?
Unless something weird happens.
Yeah.
I mean, would have to be something that you would have to have huge majorities on, which the Republicans just don't have those votes.
Yeah, so it could be worse. It could be a lot worse.
Could be a lot worse on this one. It's only it's low single-digit majority. So, and I mean, throughout the course of a congressional cycle, there are often vacancies, appointments, and so if there's a special election and a competitive district, those are going to become very popular races very quickly as that majority could get pared down a little bit. So,
well, thank you, Mark.
McCarthy.
Thank you, Mark.
We're out of time, but we'll look forward to getting updates in the 118th Congress from you and seeing you next week when you come to visit us.
Likewise. All right. Looking forward to seeing you guys.
Thank you.
Mark Dan is FFRS Director of Governmental Affairs in Washington, D.C. We also want to thank you listeners for tuning in to Free Thought Radio in Philadelphia to WOM, in Bryn Mawr to WZML, in Madison, Wisconsin to WIDE and WMUU, in Janesville, Wisconsin to WADR, in Bryan, Texas, KEOS, San Marcos, Texas, KZSM, Columbia, Missouri, KOPN, Eugene, Oregon, KEPW, Vermont and New Hampshire, WOOL, Black Sheep Radio, Rhode Island, WRIU, and Ithaca, New York, WRFI. If you listen to us on the podcast, give us a thumbs up on your podcast provider and tell your friends and family to learn more about Freethought Radio at ffrf.org/radio.
Also find out about the new podcast, We Dissent, featuring female attorneys working for state church separation, including two of our attorneys at FFRF, including Rebecca Markert, who came up with this idea. Oh, and then ask for information at ffrf.org or join us, ffrf.org/join. You can not only support Free Thought Radio by becoming a member, but all of FFRF's vital work on state church litigation. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday